Turning Point. Overviews, insights, and analysis on hot issues of global significance. Brought to you on weekdays by the Voice of Russia.
Hello and welcome to the show with me, Екатерина Кудашкина.
And me, Ian Sumter.
Today we're looking at the resumption of the Israeli-Palestinian peace process. Talks aimed at providing a peace settlement between Israel and Palestine have restarted in Washington. While negotiators in the U.S. have sounded upbeat, strong voices of opposition have been raised from both sides, criticizing the renewed dialogue, and even from the expert community inside the U.S.
So, why did the White House make it a special point to have the talks between Israel and Palestine restarted at this particular moment? Do these negotiations really provide a viable start towards a long-lasting peace in the region?
In fact, these are the questions we have been discussing with our guest speakers, Daniel Pipes, the president of the Middle East Forum in the United States, Jonathan Speier, a senior research fellow at the Global Research and International Affairs Center in Herzliya, Israel, and Dr. Alaa Tartir, program director of Al-Shabaka, which is the Palestinian Policy Network, based in the UK. On Monday, Israeli and Palestinian negotiators arrived in Washington to open the talks, which are taking place at the State Department and continuing Tuesday, and are described as the first major effort since negotiations broke down back in 2008.
Officials said the parties have agreed to negotiate for at least 9 months.
However, according to the AP report, in a written statement on Monday, President Obama said the talks marked, like you put it, a promising step forward, but warned that hard work and hard choices remain ahead.
Like Obama, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas are not directly involved in this first round, but both have been deeply engaged in the process in recent months, meeting frequently with Kerry.
Well, in fact, the Secretary of State, John Kerry, really traveled for, I suppose it was 6 times to the Middle East. And surprisingly enough, well, of course he was focusing on the situation in Egypt and in Syria, but he was really spending much time in trying to persuade the representatives of the Palestinian Authority and Israel to sit down at the negotiation table. However, as far as I understand, the reaction has been largely skeptical because, for instance, if we look at the story published by Dr. Ramzi Baroud, who is an internationally syndicated columnist and the editor of PalestineChronicle.com, he said, and let me quote it, on his 6th trip to the Middle East during his post and following intense shuttle diplomacy, likened to that of Henry Kissinger, Kerry managed to create a modest common space between the Israeli government and the Palestinian Authority, thus securing their agreement to resume the so-called peace process. However, as far as I understand, the expert community has remained largely skeptical of the outcome of these negotiations. And here I suggest we could listen to our guest speaker, Dr. Alaa Tartir, program director of Al-Shabaka, which is the Palestinian Policy Network, based in the UK.
Well, Palestinians would be hopeful from such negotiations if they feel that the parameters are different, if they feel the conditions are different, and if they feel that it is a different round of negotiations and different approach. Unfortunately, it just seems to be the same old. It seems to be the same failed approach. This approach is followed again and again. Palestinians experienced rounds of negotiations since more than 20 years, and the output is rather clear. So unless the preconditions and the major pillars for a fruitful and successful negotiations are there, then unfortunately it's doomed to fail. So realistically speaking, if you don't change the rules of the games, then the outcome will not differ. And I'm not feeling that there's any changes, neither in terms of negotiators nor in terms of the rules of negotiations. So expecting better results will not be rational at this stage.
But when we're talking about the need of change, what kind of changes would you like to see?
Yeah, well, over the last two decades, the Palestinians compromised a lot just by accepting to negotiate over 22% of their historical land. They compromised big times. And then 20 years ago, they started the negotiators started the Oslo peace process. And what happened now after 20 years is an entrenchment of the occupation, an expansion of settler colonialism, an expansion of settlers and settlements in the West Bank, an entrenchment of the apartheid status. So this resulted from not addressing the imbalances of power in the first place, and they are failing once again to address that issue now in this round of negotiation. What should be clear that these are negotiations between an oppressed and oppressors. It's not a negotiation between two identical parties. It is between someone who has the right in the land and someone who has stole the land. We can add to that that who's negotiating now, at least from the Palestinian side, are not necessarily legitimate leadership. Definitely they are not the elected one, or their term had been finished, so there is a question of legitimacy. A third point that we can add is that citizens are not consulted, or they are sidelined in this. Like, it's the negotiators and the leaders are going once again, but marginalizing the voices of the people. And finally, what we can add to that is that once again, the broker of the peace talks is again the U.S., which is very clear it's a dishonest broker for peace. So this legitimate, this exclusive sponsorship of the peace process only by a dishonest, biased U.S. Government, it definitely will not lead us to any sustainable peace, keeping in mind that the facts on the ground today are completely different than the facts on the ground 20 years ago. So the starting point, instead of looking an old and outdated map, the negotiators should start from looking on the facts on the ground, and then they ask themselves if negotiations are worth it in the first place or not.
Observers tend to talk about the difference in the positions between the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank and in Gaza.
Well, what we need to keep in mind that who are going to negotiate in Washington are the Ramallah-based Palestinian Authority. Unfortunately, the divide between the leaderships in the West Bank and Gaza is still taking place and rather entrenched and sustained after 5 to 6 years of the divide. So whom going to Washington are the Ramallah-based Fatah-affiliated political leadership. Hamas is still governing Gaza. It's not participating in these negotiations. So it is the West Bank leadership. And of course, like having the divide, Hamas has announced that they are against these negotiations, and they will not lead to anywhere. So the divide is still in existence, and it is taking different routes towards being more entrenched. So it is only one party that represents part of the Palestinians that are going to Washington negotiate, and the other part is still in Gaza.
Sarah, thank you so much. And just to remind you, our guest speaker was Alaa Tartir, Program Director of Al-Shabaka, the Palestinian Policy Network based in the UK.
This is the Voice of Russia World Service.
This is Burning Point.
We're looking at renewed peace talks between Israel and Palestine.
Now, the expert opinion in Israel is quite divided. For instance, the editor of the left-leaning Israeli daily Haaretz, Olive Ben, said, and I quote, that the current moment is a chance of a lifetime for Netanyahu to set his legacy. He said the Arab world is crumbling and weak. Its moderate Sunni leaders long for a diplomatic achievement that will prolong the life of their regimes. Hamas, worried about the fall of its Egyptian patron, Mohamed Morsi, is busy strengthening its rule and its military prowess, and will have a hard time torpedoing the talks, as it did in the past. Netanyahu understands that without a significant step vis-à-vis the Palestinians, the world will not support Israeli action against Iran. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is eager to succeed, stubborn, and knows how to conduct himself with the two parties, as he showed in the renewal of the talks. Netanyahu is at the height of his political power with no rivals. He has an alternative coalition and most of the public supports an agreement. End quote. Well, this is definitely a positive and a quite optimistic outlook.
I mean, I think to contrast that, there are several more pessimistic, more sceptical voices, one of which I heard from an article in the Israel Daily News, was expressed by Mir Dagan, who's the former head of the Mossad intelligence agency. He explained, "This should have been handled very differently. We should have conducted secret negotiations with the Arab League and only begun the negotiations with Palestine then." He was of the opinion that the Palestine issue is not only a Palestine issue, but, I quote, "a problem of the entire world. At least two states like Jordan and Saudi Arabia need to be brought on board in order to give the backing any move."
Well, in fact, the negative mood is shared by our guest speaker, Jonathan Speier. And just to remind you, he's a senior research fellow at the Global Research in International Affairs Center in Herzliya in Israel.
Well, the goal of these negotiations clearly is the hope to reach a final status accord within the envisaged 9-month period. My own view is that this is extremely unlikely to be achieved. I think that it will become quickly apparent that the positions of the two sides on the core issues of the conflict, on security, on borders, and on refugees, will rapidly be shown to be very, very far apart. And I think that the strategies of the two sides actually are very different, and that for this reason, it's highly unlikely that either within the 9-month time frame, or indeed within a longer time frame, a final status accord is in any way achievable at the moment.
But then, why do you think would Mr. Kerry press so hard to restart those contacts?
Yeah, this is a very good question. My own sense is that, frankly, this U.S. administration's policies and actions vis-a-vis the Middle East have been very strange and relatively detached from reality in a whole number of arenas, also in Egypt, also in Syria, and I think now we're seeing also in the Israeli-Palestinian context. I don't think this is an administration which has a great deal of heavyweight Middle East expertise among its top people. I think it's an administration which has made a number of false starts and false moves, and I'm afraid, I suspect, that we are about to witness another one.
How would you outline a most preferred model of the relaunch of peace negotiations with Palestinians?
Well, my own sense is that there really is not a basis for a successful negotiation at present if we are talking about a negotiation towards a final status accord. And that is because, firstly, the Palestinian national movement is split into two, of course. We should always remember that what I regard as the more dynamic or energetic side of that movement, which is Hamas in Gaza, is, of course, completely opposed to any peace process with Israel and is in favor of Israel's destruction or ceasing to exist. So, you know, first of all, the Palestinians are divided. Secondly, with regard to the West Bank Palestinian Authority in Ramallah of Mr. Mahmoud Abbas, or Dr. Mahmoud Abbas, I think that this entity is intending to achieve a Palestinian state without negotiation with Israel. I think its strategy is to exert pressure on Israel via international forums, via the United Nations, via its very good relations with the EU, and so on. And this is the strategy on which it has embarked. I'm not sure if it will work or not, but that is the strategy. Given these two realities, you know, the attempt to sort of revive the 1990s style of peace process negotiations is really, I think, rapidly going to become an irrelevance. It's simply not a move which relates to the actual realities on the ground, which I would argue actually preclude the possibility of a successful negotiation between Israelis and Palestinians at the moment, because the positions of the two sides on the core issues are simply too far apart.
Well, in fact, if we look at the situation on the ground, if we take a broader perspective, how do you think the latest developments in Egypt, in Syria, perhaps in Jordan, how could they affect the potential of the resumption of peace talks?
Well, I think that what we're seeing also in Syria and also in Egypt are clashes between a militarist, nationalist tradition in Arab politics and an Islamist tradition. And this divide in Arab politics is also reflected in the Palestinian context, in which the Fatah movement of Dr. Abbas represents the militarist and nationalist side, and Hamas, of course, is the Islamist side. I think that there is a historic process underway in the Arab world at the moment in terms of these sides clashing, and it's not going to be finished anytime soon. And frankly, for as long as this internal Arab civil war is going on, I think it is highly unlikely that the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is going to be available for solution. If we look at it from Dr. Abbas's point of view, for example, do we really believe that he is going to be able to make the kind of compromises necessary to reach a final status accord when he has the Islamists of Hamas breathing down his neck, looking for any chance to depict him as a traitor and as one who has sold out national ideals, which of course he will be easy to depict as, given the compromises that will be necessary. So I think that the unrest or civil war going on, cross-border civil war going on in the Arab world at the moment, further militates against the possibility of any successful negotiation. And given that the situation has been relatively peaceful between Israel and the Palestinian territories recently, especially compared to the roiling unrest in other countries, I'm frankly quite surprised that the U.S. administration finds it necessary to spend this amount of time on this relatively benign conflict, at least at the present time, when civil wars of a historic nature, in which in the Syrian case at least over 100,000 people have died, are going on and seem nowhere close to solution. I'm surprised by that. But as I said, this administration has its own perception of its of what is urgent and what is not in the Middle East.
Dr. Speier, thank you so much. And just to remind you, our guest speaker was Jonathan Speier, a senior research fellow at the Global Research and International Affairs Center in Herzliya in Israel. This is Burning Point.
We're looking at renewed peace talks between Israel and Palestine.
So it looks like neither party, nor the Palestinians, nor the Israelis, are exactly happy about these negotiations. So how come the negotiations have still opened? And this is the question we pose to our next guest speaker, Daniel Pipes, the president of the Middle East Forum in the United States.
Well, there was no incentive by either the Israelis or the Palestinians to get together for meetings because they are both preferring the present circumstances to making changes. However, the new Secretary of State, John Kerry, went six times to Israel and the Palestinian territories in the last 4 months and put great pressure on them, and they have agreed to have these meetings. So there's an unnatural quality to them, a sense that there is no real prospect. However, it does appear that Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister, is interested in a deal. It does appear that he has changed his views, that his platform for running for Prime Minister 6 months ago is no longer his current set of beliefs. We will soon learn about this, but there might be prospects for some breakthrough. That said, I am pessimistic about the consequences of any kind of breakthrough, because the Palestinian Authority has repeatedly shown itself not willing to make any real concessions to Israel. We don't know what Secretary Kerry actually talked about, his many hours of negotiations to get the two parties to the table. Now, all he did is he got them to agree to talk. He didn't get them to agree on anything substantial.
Right.
We don't know what the details are.
But it looks like the Israelis have been letting some Palestinian prisoners out of jail.
Despite enormous unpopularity in Israel, polls show 9-1 against the release of these 104 killers. The Netanyahu government has agreed to release them. It certainly raises questions in my mind. Why do this? Why take some of the most notorious and hated and vile killers and release them simply as a gesture of goodwill? There are basically two possible explanations. One is the one I offered before, that Netanyahu really does want an agreement. And the other is that there is some kind of deal, perhaps concerning Iran, and that this is the visible component of a larger negotiation. I'm skeptical that that's the case, but it is conceivably so.
Like you're saying, you're pessimistic about the outcome of those negotiations. But in that case, neither the Palestinians nor the Israelis stand to lose as much as Mr. Kerry in case this attempt fails.
Yes, if this attempt fails, it'll both harm Mr. Kerry, who's put in such large amounts of time and put such great emphasis on it. It'll also make it less likely that anyone else will try again to bring the Israelis and Palestinians together for some long period of time. So both his reputation and the course of these negotiations are vulnerable to failure at this point. Failure, interestingly, failure is widely predicted by almost everyone across the political spectrum. No matter what your views are, what you want to come out of it, almost everyone says this is not likely to work, and I am one of those.
In that case, how are the decisions in foreign policy taken? I mean, if the decision to try to put those people at the negotiation table runs contrary to the opinion then shared by most of the expert community, then how do people decide how they're going to handle their foreign policy?
And to make your question even tougher, why at a time when Syria is in civil war, Egypt appears to be possibly entering a civil war, Iran is building nuclear weapons, and so forth, why at this time when the Middle East is in flames, does the U.S. Secretary of State focus on the Israelis and Palestinians where things are basically quiet? Not to speak of other issues around the world. I think the answer lies in the fact that John Kerry, like many in the Obama administration, sees the Arab-Israeli conflict as the key to making progress in other issues. He is of the belief, I think, he hasn't exactly said this, but his actions suggest it, he is of the belief that if you can get an accord between the Palestinians and Israelis, then other issues, such as Syria and Egypt and Iran, are easier to approach. I disagree. I think they're quite separate. The one has little to do with the other. But I think that does explain his focus on what almost everyone agrees at this point is a peripheral issue, not the central issue.
And finally, Dr. Pipes, just as an expert, how do you see an efficient U.S. policy in the Middle East in the present circumstances?
I would focus on Syria, Egypt, Iran. I would not be spending, if I were Secretary of State, I would not be spending time on the Israelis and Palestinians. And my approach is quite simple. Always oppose the Islamists, or always support the secular, modern, liberal elements, and work with the autocrats, the tyrants, as need be, but always press them to open up their systems.
Dr. Pipes, thank you so much. And just to remind you, this time our guest speaker was Daniel Pipes, the president of the Middle East Forum in the United States. So the question is still up in the air. I mean, why would John Kerry choose to be so preoccupied with the issue of peace negotiations between Israel and Palestine at the moment when the whole of the Middle East is on fire? This is really a huge question to me, and perhaps Dr. Pipes was correct by hinting that this is part of the bargain, and perhaps this is rather more about the Iranian issue than about Palestinian and Israeli peace negotiations.
No, I mean, and certainly the Israel-Palestine question has been something that is, you know, is very much a favoured issue, particularly of the Democratic Party. It was something that President Clinton was very much involved with. It maybe sort of, you know, literally sort of ran its course during the Bush administration, but it is still therefore surprising that even when Barack Obama was elected again, we had another Democrat administration. This did not get picked up in 2009, in 2010, and has waited until this much later stage. So I agree. While this peace process is something that, you know, has always been in the background, if you like, of the Democrat Party, something that they've looked for in foreign policy, it has taken a very long time to come to the fore. And I think this naturally leads to ask questions, to think that actually there is something else on the table. And this question of the involvement of Iran, of there being some much wider negotiation, I think is something that would be very typical, very sort of very much something that was likely to resolve from this approach.
Well, true. So the question, in fact, remains whether this is all about peace between Israel and Palestinians, or rather about the war with Iran. And with this, we end this edition of Burning Point, brought to you by the Voice of Russia radio station. It was presented by me, Katerina Kudoshkina.
And me, Ian Sumter.
Thank you so much for staying with us. Goodbye.
And take care.
Burning Point. For reviews, insights, and analysis on hot issues of global significance. Brought to you on weekdays by the Voice of Russia.